It's 5:32, and you're listening to the Wednesday, January 18th edition of the KALX Evening News. Here are tonight's top stories.
Investigators continue to learn more about the shooting spree in the Stockton Elementary School.
Berkeley officials ask Herrick Hospital to reopen its emergency ward.
While racial tensions continue to flare in Miami, officials expect the Super Bowl will not be affected.
And in sports, the Bears are gearing up for the big game, basketball style. Good evening, I'm Peter Dudley.
And I'm Phil Riggin. We'll have these stories and more in a moment. Authorities revealed today that Patrick Edward Purdy attended the Stockton school where he killed five children and wounded 30 other people with an automatic weapon before committing suicide. A school district spokesman said a search of school records indicate that Purdy attended Cleveland Elementary School from kindergarten in 1969 through third grade in 1973 before transferring to a Sacramento school. The 26-year-old killed himself with a bullet to the head after firing about 60 rounds from a bayonet-equipped automatic AK-47 assault rifle at hundreds of youngsters yesterday at Cleveland Elementary School. Today, Stockton reflected on the disaster and some of the heroes it produced. School district spokesman John Close.
If they gave medals for conspicuous professionalism in a crisis, that Pat Buescher, the principal of Cleveland Elementary, should get the highest one they give out.
Today, stunned children began returning to their campus, greeted by bouquets atop the school sign on the front lawn and five red roses at its base.
Meanwhile, police say they found more than 100 toy soldiers and jeeps in the Stockton motel room where Purdy stayed before his rampage. Captain Dennis Perry said toy army figures were scattered all over room 104 at the El Rancho Motel, and some toy soldiers were in a freezer.
Well, why would someone open fire at an elementary school with an assault rifle? Psychiatrists say such killers are following an American fad, but warn authorities not to overreact. The question, of course, took on new significance as police probed the motivations of Patrick Purdy, the drifter who returned to his former elementary school and opened fire on a crowd of children, killing five and wounding 30. Dr. Michael Mantell, chief psychologist for the San Diego Police Department, calls Purdy's death a grandstand suicide. James Allen Fox, who wrote Mass Murder, America's Growing Menace, says that mass murderers like Purdy are angry at the world for a lifetime of frustrations and blame everybody else for their problems. He says they want revenge against society and do so by hurting something dear to most people, children.
Well, the kidnapping of a Bay Area girl will be reenacted on national television tonight. NBC's Unsolved Mysteries will show a reenactment of the November 19th kidnapping of Hayward's Michaela Garrick. The case has been highly publicized, from news coverage to appeals to the kidnappers from local celebrities. Now the case will appear on a popular primetime show. KRON's Sherry Bonzel said the program actually does live up to its claims.
Definitely. It's had outstanding success in solving these unsolved mysteries.
An NBC spokesperson also said the program probably averages one case solved per week. Segment producer of Unsolved Mysteries, Shannon McGeehan, said that although the actress in the segment does not exactly resemble Garrick, that doesn't really matter.
Keep really close to the details, according to the police, of what happened, you know, where she was standing when she was abducted, what they were doing just previous to that. But in terms of the actors always looking like the person, that's not always important because we show the pictures multiple times throughout the segment.
She added that, of course, NBC is hopeful.
Obviously, we're all crossing our fingers down here that something would happen. I know there's just been a lot of local publicity, and what we're hoping is maybe with this national exposure we'll get an answer, because all we want is to get Michaela back safe.
Hayward Detective Ken Gross, who is leading the investigation, is in Burbank tonight to handle calls. The program will have an 800 number set up for viewers to call should they feel they have information relevant to the case.
San Francisco's support of the United Farm Workers grape boycott, which has put it on the black list of growers and Central Valley communities, has prompted a national Hispanic group to hold a convention in the city. The National Coalition of Hispanic Health and Human Services Organizations says support of the boycott was a factor in the group's decision to hold its 1990 convention in San Francisco. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors, with the strong support of Mayor Art Agnes, voted last month to support the grape boycott. The UFW claims pesticides used to grow the fruit harm agricultural workers. The city's action set off a storm of criticism from businesses and the tourist industry. Several agricultural groups have canceled plans to hold conventions in the city, and some San Joaquin Valley agencies have begun a boycott of San Francisco. In response, Art Agnes has urged the Convention and Visitors Bureau to use the city's grape boycott to attract progressive, minority, gay, consumer, and environmental organizations to the city.
A UC associate professor is suing a St. Louis newspaper for $1.2 million. Harry Edwards of UC's sociology department claims the St. Louis Post-Dispatch misquoted him. In the suit, Edwards also claims that the paper published an editorial piece attributed to him. However, the editorial not only misquotes Edwards, it also does not represent his views, and it has given him a lot of bad publicity. Edwards' attorney says the article looks as if it was written by a white supremacist. The paper published the opinion piece tagged as taken from an interview with Tom Wheatley, the reporter involved.
Berkeley City Management wants Herrick Hospital to reopen its emergency room, saying the closing was a serious blow to the poor people of Berkeley. City Manager Hal Cronkite led off a special hearing last night by calling on AltaBates Herrick, which manages the hospital, to restore the services it stopped providing last May. AltaBates Herrick is a partnership formed to manage both AltaBates and Herrick hospitals. Spokeswoman Carolyn Kemp says the emergency room closing boiled down to a familiar issue.
And it was done for financial reasons.
A number of speakers rose to assail the closing and ask for reopening, including Assistant City Manager Emma Jones and Berkeley Health Officer Carmen Navarez. Navarez claimed that Herrick served at least half of the city's low-income residents. Kemp says that people are still being served at Herrick, but by an urgent care center rather than an emergency room. So what's the difference?
It's acute, serious, or critical care is taken care of at an emergency room. Now, urgent care clinics is something that calls for haste. Could be a broken leg or arm. Could be, God, my throat's been hurting for 2 days and I don't know what it is. I'll go have it checked out. Women could go in there for gynecological problems. So it's something that has an immediacy or an urgency to it, but it is not in the critical care arena.
Kemp says care is available in Berkeley.
Anyone, whether they're a street person or a millionaire, can access the emergency room at AltaBates as well as the urgent care center at Herrick. The medical care and the medical coverage to the city of Berkeley, I think, remains at the high caliber that the two institutions have been known to provide in the past.
Despite the change in operations, Kemp says the hospitals continue to lose money.
A state hearing officer says he will recommend that 7 Fireman's Fund insurance companies be prohibited from canceling their 55,000 automobile policies in California under the terms of Proposition 103. That announcement was made in San Francisco by Peter Groom, a Department of Insurance attorney who presided over a department hearing on the attempt by firemen's to withdraw its auto insurance business from California. Groom cited a provision of Proposition 103, approved by the voters in November, that allows cancellation or non-renewal of auto policies only for fraud, non-payment, or an increase in the insured risk. Groom rejected arguments by company lawyers that the provision does not apply to insurance policies that were issued before Prop 103 passed. If his recommendation is approved by Insurance Commissioner Roxanne Gillespie, a fireman's lawyer said the company would appeal to Superior Court. Major insurance companies have also asked the state Supreme Court to declare Prop 103 unconstitutional.
Yesterday, 7 candidates faced the Alameda County Board of Supervisors in a quest for a single supervisorial seat. The seat became vacant by the death of John George, who was felled by a heart attack last month. Among the hopefuls are former Berkeley Mayor Warren Widener, Rent Board candidate Pedro Noguera, and Oakland civic activist Paul Cobb. Yesterday's meeting was partly beauty contest and partly line of duty. There are a total of 14 candidates for the seat, and supervisors have held private meetings with applicants. Supervisors have until February 8th to appoint a successor to George, a popular supervisor who champions social causes.
Parents of Berkeley students can now call a new hotline to excuse their children from school. The line, set up through an answering service, will cost the school system 40 cents per call, but it will save them much more than that. Presently, the state gives $17 to each school per student per day, unless the student was absent without a valid excuse. One estimate says the city has already lost more than $100,000 this year due to unexcused absences. Assistant Superintendent Anton Younger says the hotline will reduce this loss.
That does two things for us. First, we know that why the student is not in school. And secondly, that allows us to count that absence towards our state aid.
He added that the hotline has 10 lines and is operating 24 hours a day, so parents can call any time it's convenient.
The plan to consolidate the Bay Area's mass transit systems is not being well received by BART officials. The plan was proposed by State Senator Quentin Kopp of San Francisco. It would combine the bus and rail systems, making the entire operation more cost-effective. Members of a BART committee say this is not so because all drivers would have to be paid the same. They say raising the bus and uni employee salaries to match BART salaries would make the plan too costly.
Rockwell International Corporation said today it's agreed to charges that it double-billed the Air Force for work on a navigation satellite. But the formal act of entering a guilty plea in federal court was canceled for lack of a court reporter. A hearing to accept the plea was rescheduled for tomorrow in Los Angeles. The aerospace firm is charged with 7 counts of conspiracy, mail fraud, and contempt for allegedly overcharging the Air Force by $466,000 in 1983 for work on the Navistar Global Positioning Satellite. The charges carry a maximum fine of $1 million and could result in the companies being barred from bidding on government contracts.
Entertainment junkies take note. Representatives of the two largest actors' unions lashed out today at the president of ABC Entertainment after the network executive said ABC is preparing for a possible actors' strike this summer. A spokesman for the 70,000-member Screen Actors Guild said comments made earlier this week by ABC's Brandon Stoddard were clearly premature and dangerous. Stoddard said the network was proceeding as though a walkout might occur.
Yolo County Sheriff Rod Graham, snared in the FBI's undercover probe of state capital corruption, pleaded innocent today in Sacramento to 6 counts of bribery, conspiracy, and extortion. The 47-year-old Graham entered the plea before U.S. Magistrate Esther Mix. Mix ordered him to remain free without bail and set February 9th for a status conference. Graham told reporters following the brief court proceedings that he was innocent of the allegations. When asked whether he had plans to resign as sheriff, he answered, quote, none whatsoever, end quote. He is accused of extorting more than $3,600 for his 1986 re-election campaign from the Lighthouse Marina Project, a multi-million dollar recreational complex planned for the Sacramento River across from Sacramento.
Thomas R. McConnell, professor emeritus of the Graduate School of Education at UC Berkeley, died Monday at his home in Oakland. He was 87. McConnell was the founding director of UC's Center for Studies in Higher Education at Berkeley. He served on presidential commissions on higher education under Presidents Truman, Kennedy, and Johnson, and was a consultant to President Eisenhower's Commission on Higher Education. McConnell is survived by his wife, Ruth, 2 children, 5 grandchildren, and the 2 great-grandchildren. No funeral services will be held. A quick correction on the Alameda County Supervisor's story we read a little earlier. Candidate Pedro Noguera is a former ASUC president and aide to Berkeley Mayor Lonnie Hancock. He was not a candidate for the rent board. That was his brother Ricardo Noguera.
KALX News Time is 5:45. And up next, Miami rocks with violence and Washington rolls as inauguration festivities begin. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Mike Dukakis. You're listening to the...
Violence has eased after a second night of disorders in Miami. Police reduced their presence after looting and fires subsided around dawn. Overnight, the unrest had spread from its start in one largely black neighborhood, Overton, into another, Liberty City. Ray Lang, a spokesman for the Miami Police Department, says activities on Tuesday were not limited to protesters.
But I think what happened last night with the burning and the looting is that the criminals in the community had a chance all day long to plan what they were going to do. You did not have honest people out there looting and burning last night. You had your everyday petty thieves that had a whole day to plan their nighttime activities. And there's no way to gauge just what was going to happen the second night.
Violence began after police fatally shot a black motorcyclist. The Justice Department has begun an investigation of the shooting, and the Miami City Council has convened a meeting on the unrest.
The U.S. Supreme Court today upheld the constitutionality of federal rules that took effect in 1987 to eliminate what some considered unjustified disparities in sentences. The changes generally stiffen sentences. Some judges, however, had refused to use the rules, saying that the federal judicial panel which created them violated the separation of powers by usurping rights of Congress. But the High Court decided that Congress did have the right to delegate the specifics of writing rules to fit its statutory guidelines.
President-elect Bush, Vice President-elect Quayle, their families, and thousands of spectators assembled at the Lincoln Memorial to kick off this week's inaugural festivities. Members of the audience turned on tiny flashlights symbolizing 1,000 points of light, and Bush stayed with that theme as he spoke of the coming 4 years.
It is the ambition of my presidency to make these 1,000 points of light shine brighter than ever before. And where today there is darkness, let us work together to bring light to shine on all of God's children.
KALX reporter Saba Karashi is in Washington this week, and he filed this story on today's activities, beginning with a ceremony at the Lincoln Memorial.
A crowd estimated over 20,000 turned out. Willard Scott emceed the program, and performers included the Beach Boys, the Jets, and the U.S. Navy Band. They were followed by a spectacular fireworks display. Right now, a $1,500 inaugural dinner is getting underway at three separate locations, including right here at Union Station. Festivities will continue through Sunday morning and include 11 inaugural balls as well as 16 other events. The actual swearing-in ceremony, which will mark the official end of the Reagan era, takes place Friday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time on the West Portico of the Capitol Building. This event, as well as many others, will be open to the public. Extensive preparations have been undertaken, including the closing of 11 major Washington roadways. Commuters are being advised to take public transportation. Trash cans, newspaper boxes, and mailboxes were removed from the parade route, and manhole covers were inspected and sealed shut. The extravagance of the celebration has been blasted by critics who claim that the money could be better spent on the poor. However, members of the Presidential Inaugural Committee claim that the high cost means that more events can be open to the public. For KALX News, this is Saba Karashi reporting from Union Station in Washington, D.C.
Well, Peter, it's been a busy day for President-elect Bush. First, he honored the teaching profession at a gathering of 230 top-rated public school teachers from around the country. Next, he saluted outgoing President Reagan at a Republican National Committee luncheon. From there, he attended a poignant reunion with former Navy buddies from World War II. And tonight, Mr. Bush is making the rounds of inaugural dinners in his honor.
Well, he also officially moved out of the vice presidential residence and into transitional quarters across from the White House for a two-day stay. Joining him and his wife, Barbara, at Blair House are the couple's children, spouses, and 10 grandchildren. The rest of the Bush clan has taken up a nearby hotel. In all, 250 Bush relatives will be present for the inauguration.
Well, President and Mrs. Reagan tearfully said goodbye to hundreds of White House staffers as the Marine Corps band played Auld Lang Syne. Reagan says he's bittersweet about leaving Washington and happy with the job that's been done.
We've all shared, and I like to think maybe it's kind of close to what happened 200 years ago. We were all revolutionaries. And the revolution has been a success.
The couple was presented with several gifts, including a replica of the White House built by the Seabees at Camp David.
Officials at Cape Canaveral are expressing confidence the space shuttle Discovery can be launched on February 23rd as scheduled. Kennedy Space Center Director Forrest McCartney says engineers have resolved tile and engine problems from the last shuttle flight and can safely move ahead.
The Carrier Dome at Syracuse University was filled with mourners today. A memorial service was held for the 35 Syracuse students killed in last month's crash of a Pan Am jet in Lockerbie, Scotland. A number of public officials attended, including New York Governor Mario Cuomo and Senators D'Amato and Moynihan. Reflecting on the accident brought out strong emotions in many of the mourners, like Daniel Cohen, who took time to suggest changes in attitudes and policies.
The only way anything is going to change, the only way you're not going to have to come out here and face another group of grieving parents for another another news conference like this is to have people press for an investigation, press for the kind of changes that will not allow this sort of thing to happen again.
The university is setting up scholarships and a monument in memory of the dead.
Well, today was a beautiful day in the Bay Area. We have meteorologist Mike Pechner to tell us why this is happening in mid-January.
Well, Phil, I'll tell you, Pete, it's a real simple meteorological situation here in the Bay Area. We have northeast offshore winds, and the air comes downslope off the Sierra Nevada first, then gets a little lift up over the Oak and Berkeley Hills, comes downslope just to the west or the east of us over the hills, and as that air moves down, it heats by compression and friction with the Earth's surface. Air heats up at the rate of about 5.5 degrees per 1,000 feet in dry air, and with that downslope wind, we saw temperatures read into the mid-60s to near 70 today in some of the warmest parts of the Bay Area. Officially, Oakland Museum was 63, but it was about 66 on campus today. Overnight, low tonight, mild 40s. Then the beautiful day tomorrow with highs in the 60s, hazy sunshine and high clouds. And if you want to play hooky tomorrow or take a mental health day, probably see temperatures near 70 along the coast. It was 66 today at Santa Cruz and Half Moon Bay. More fine beach weather for the next 2 days. Could see some rain late in the weekend. That's evening weather. I'm meteorologist Mike Pechner for KALX.
Oh, thanks for that lesson, Mike.
You're welcome. Just call me Dr. Wizard.
Okay, Dr. Wizard, thank you.
Right.
At confirmation hearings on Capitol Hill, Secretary of State Designate James Baker says the Bush administration may raise quotas for refugees. Baker says the new administration will also have to look at increasing funding for the refugee program. The panel also asked Baker about his thoughts on a human rights conference in Moscow. The Reagan administration recently changed policy and decided to support the conference. Baker says he's unsure about that decision.
I've had some reservations in watching the issue develop, even during the campaign, about the wisdom of holding a human rights conference in Moscow. But having said that, I have to say to you that I am impressed by the changes which are taking place in the Soviet Union and what Secretary Shultz and the President have achieved there. I think those are dramatic changes.
The committee is expected to recommend Baker enthusiastically.
Well, in Vienna, two of the three East European countries most criticized by the West for their human rights records, Romania and Czechoslovakia, have been replying to those attacks. The Romanian foreign minister said his country was an example to others in its respect for democratic freedoms and fundamental rights. The Czechoslovak foreign minister also rebutted Western criticism. Mark Brain reports from Vienna on the response.
Along with East Germany and Czechoslovakia, Romania has been extensively criticized at this Vienna meeting, only where the Czechoslovaks and East Germans have been taken to task for the specific and recent suppression of demonstrations. It's for its entire performance on human rights that Romania has been condemned. In his reply this afternoon, Foreign Minister Ioan Tottu, speaking, he said, on behalf of President Nicolae Ceaușescu, was defiant in his rejection of what he termed all attempts to denigrate Romania's economic and social policy. The Vienna meeting, he declared, had not convened to analyze conditions within individual countries, a view radically at variance with how most other delegations from both East and West interpret the brief of the Vienna talks. In fact, said the foreign minister, one could only wish that social problems, democratic freedoms, and fundamental human rights, including those of minorities, were solved in other countries at least to the same degree as in Romania. The reference to minorities was aimed at neighboring Hungary, severely critical in recent years of Romania's alleged repression of its large community of ethnic Hungarians.
That was the BBC's Mark Brain in Vienna.
KALX News Time is 5:55. Up next in sports, the Cal basketball teams gear up for crucial Pac-10 games against Stanford, and a 49er veteran announces his retirement. Mike Curto has more.
Good evening and welcome to the KALX Sports Report. Tonight, both the Cal men's and women's basketball teams prepare themselves to do battle with those South Bay heathen, the Stanford Cardinal. The men's team will host the Cardinal tomorrow night here at Harmon Gym. Cal is coming off of a last-second 82-80 loss to Washington. The loss lowered the Bears' record to 12-5, 3-3 in the Pac-10. Bears starting point guard Keith Smith hopes that the rest of the team has gotten over the heartbreaking loss.
We're just going to learn from that Washington game and look forward to Stanford game. And one of the biggest things we have to do that we didn't do against Washington is rebound.
Stanford, who will come in town ranked 20th in the nation and sporting a 13-3 record, 5-1 in the Pac-10, defeated Miami earlier this week. Smith thinks that Stanford will present a formidable opponent.
They're big and strong. They're going to be a real physical game. And we're just going to have to be on our, you know, on our P's and Q's and make sure we don't make too many mistakes.
Thursday night's game is sold out, but you can hear all the action live here on CalX beginning at 7:30. And in case you're wondering who Keith Smith thinks is going to win the Super Bowl.
I see the 49ers do it, but some tell me Cincinnati might sneak up on them.
The Cal women's basketball team will be back in action on Friday night when they will travel to Palo Alto to battle the Stanford Cardinal. The Cal women are coming off of an 80-71 victory over Washington State on last Saturday. The key issue for the Bears is the status of freshman Trisha Stafford. Stafford left the Washington game with a knee injury. Today, doctors announced that it was a sprain, and Stafford will be back in action in about a week and a half. Cal head coach Gooch Foster says that Stafford has already begun working out.
She's already on the bike. She's already doing exercises. We will have her doing drills, all kinds of things. So we're going to know and feel real, you know, real sure that she's okay before we put her in a situation, because what we don't want to do is we don't want to rush her back out there and then have cause for a serious injury.
Stafford will certainly miss Friday night's game against Stanford. Stanford is the only Pac-10 women's team ranked in the top 20, holding the number 7 spot. That game also can be heard live here on KALX beginning at 7:30 on Friday. The continuous civil unrest in Miami caused the postponement of a scheduled NBA game in the Miami Arena. The homestanding Heat were to have played the Phoenix Suns. It'll be played at a later date. There is also a game scheduled at the arena for tomorrow night when the Chicago Bulls come to town. However, the Miami situation has not affected the preparations for the Super Bowl game, which will be held Sunday at Joe Robbie Stadium in Miami. National Football League officials are said to be watching the so far ongoing riot story, but most observers say it will be business as usual on Sunday. In what's been a relatively quiet Super Bowl week as far as the players go in Miami, a member of the San Francisco 49ers made big news this morning. Veteran Randy Cross says he'll retire after Sunday's title game with the Cincinnati Bengals. The 34-year-old center, who was a standout at UCLA, was taken by the 49ers in the second round of the 1976 NFL Draft. Cross, who will be appearing in his third Super Bowl, would like to add a third championship ring to his collection. Turning to top 20 college basketball, third-ranked Georgetown will be playing its second straight game without head coach John Thompson tonight. The Hoyas bench boss will sit out a Big East game with Providence as he continues a protest of Proposition 42. That's the ruling which would deny athletic scholarships and other financial aid to those who don't get a minimum score of 700 on the SAT and have a 2-point grade point average. There are five other top 20 college basketball games tonight. In an ACC battle, top-ranked Duke will clash with number 13 North Carolina, while the Big 8 features a matchup between number 5 Oklahoma and 17th-ranked Kansas. We have a score. Oh, that Georgetown-Providence matchup at halftime. Providence is upsetting number 3 Georgetown 48-37. And in the NBA tonight, the Warriors will host the New York Knicks in a sold-out game that should be real exciting. The Warriors working on a 5-game win streak. And for CalX Sports, this has been Mike Curto reporting.
How about them Warriors? What do you think?
They've won 5 in a row. They're unstoppable. Every game, they're just playing even better, and that's with their two centers injured, too. It's just amazing.
Not quite to the playoff position yet. You think they'll make it?
They're a game out of the playoff position right now, and if they keep playing like they are now, I think they'll get that spot by the end of the season.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Well, Phil, do you want to cut your cancer risk?
Absolutely.
The National Cancer Institute has a new study showing that a certain type of diet appears to reduce the risk of stomach cancer. The study was conducted in China, and it found that a diet high in onions and garlic apparently reduces the risk of stomach cancer. Although they think it'll be good for your health, they're not really sure it'll be good for your social life.
That's why everybody avoids me, but I'm a very healthy guy.
Nothing
That's new. It for this edition of the KALX Evening News. Thanks go to producer Anthony Denzer, engineer Leah Ceccarelli, and contributing writer Mark Tremaine. Join us every weekday at 8 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. for all the latest news, weather, and sports. For KALX News, I'm Phil Regan.
And I'm Peter Dudley.
Good night.